The Guardian.
Hello and welcome to the Guardian Football Weekly International Break Special. But it's not meaningless friendly break, it's the Nations League. We'll explain it, potentially in a way that doesn't send you to sleep. Also today, VAR in the Premier League, Ronaldo back in La Liga, the Danes field some futsal players, Beckham's into Miami, Robert Earnshaw on UFOs, a dog is a manager in Paraguay. Yes, it is the international break. We'll have lots of your questions and we'll have a nice time on the Guardian Football Weekly Extra. Barry Glendenning, hello.
Hello, Max.
Marquis de Sade writes, the Phantom Breather returns. Ellis James, hello.
I find it very unfair that Barry gets criticism for breathing.
No, actually.
And it's not me.
There's been some criticism this season that one of us is breathing.
Yeah. Don't look at me.
Hello, Wilson.
I've never breathed.
No. Well, we don't think it's you.
I haven't done the pod yet, so it can't be me, I don't think.
Well, the breathing has definitely carried on while I haven't been here.
Well.
So unless I've left my disembodied breath.
John Bruin was here on Monday.
Yep.
And he definitely breathes.
Yep.
So it could be him. It could be that.
John Bruin was here on both occasions, the Phantom Breather.
Have you had any ex-colliers on or ex-coal miners with Nemo Cornelius?
Well, no, but we know about, you know, at the start, by part three, Barry will just be coughing his guts up mid very insightful yeah. answers from other people. So I don't know if it's Barry. Anyway, how's your season going, Ellis?
I'm absolutely loving the Championship and I think the Premier League is hugely overrated.
And you're loving Graham Potter?
I love Graham Potter. He's fighting with one hand tied behind his back because we had a disastrous window and the club promised that they were going to bring players in on loan. They're now talking about January, even though Hugh Jenkins in the past has always said that players in January are overpriced. We are playing some of our players from the under-23s. We're having to make the step up. People like Joe Roden, who's only 20, playing as a centre-half in the Championship. However, I went to Millwall on Saturday. I don't know if I can use this word, but they are obsessed with the word nonce, Millwall fans. I got called the word nonce 200 times in 90 minutes.
And now, in your whole life, would you say, how many times would you say you've been
200
called
times. Right, okay. It's all very concentrated into Saturday.
How many of those were Barney?
Jonathan, you have had an accident already.
What is going on with coffee this morning? Like, it's not as big as your accident this morning.
That's
but it
true.
Is nonetheless an accident.
I bought four coffees from Pret with one of the Pret cardboard carry holder. And it'd gone to pieces within minutes.
20 yards
it just
the door.
Couldn't handle the pressure of an international break, could it? So I went back in and carried it in a different way. You've just poured coffee all over your right breast.
Yeah.
But yes.
You look like you're lactating.
Yes. You're lactating coffee. That would be good. I'd like to lactate coffee. It wouldn't be
Wilson lactates coffee and tactics. That's what he does.
If you were really in need of a coffee and the only option was being suckled by Wilson, would you do it?
Hang on. So it depends. I mean,
any coffee you want.
Is it single origin?
Macchiato.
I could be your Pret nurse.
Very good. Right. Francis says, can you explain the Nations League? I've Googled it. And I'm still none the wiser.
It's actually not that complicated. There seems to be a myth that... it's not a myth. It looks complicated, but it really isn't. Because I remember covering the draw, thinking, oh my God, this is going to be a nightmare. And it at the end of it went, oh, actually, yeah, it's quite simple. So it's basically split all the countries in Europe into four tiers. Four groups of three in each one, I think. They play each other home and away. Then there's semi-finals, final. Winner of each group, winner of the top tier group, you know, so England are in that group. They win the Nations League. So on. There's promotion, relegation. And it basically offers four teams a backdoor into Euro 2020.
Yeah. It's a safety net, isn't it?
Yeah.
That's the only complicated bit.
So the four pool winners of League A advance to a mini tournament to decide the overall champion next summer.
However, if you are a pool winner, but you have already qualified via the traditional way of qualifying, for the traditional method of qualifying for Euro 2020, then the next highest ranked team in your pool gets what would have been your place in the playoffs. So for Wales and team in Tier B, because we're still ranked quite highly according to FIFA, I would say it's likely we get a playoff place.
Mm. And it's basically to make internationals slightly more competitive. You know, people complain about friendlies being a waste of time. I'm certainly an advocate that they are. And it, you know, for teams like the Republic of Ireland, Wales, Scotland, Northern Ireland, who generally struggle to qualify for tournaments, it offers a genuine sort of bona fide second chance.
Scotland in particular, because they're in Tier C, and they're the third highest ranked team in that tier. So it's looking quite good for them to get a playoff place.
Mm. And actually, then you have... The most exciting game for me is D4, Liechtenstein, Gibraltar. You know, these teams that never get to play each other because they're always in the bottom, you know, they're just the lowest. Yeah. They're just going to get humped 10-0 by everyone. Let's see who's the best of these.
Well, they get to
the
play
plumbers.
Proper football and just packing them behind the ball and hoping for the best. So, I mean, my one concern with this to do with the qualifying is it's very possible that a team could go into its final qualifier and it would be advantageous to lose it. If they already know they're not going to qualify through the traditional route but are looking at a playoff spot, by losing, you know, they could have a situation where they're playing a team that they want to get points in order to change who goes through from the safety net bit.
As Barry said, it's totally straightforward.
No, the Nations League bit is straightforward. The qualifying is quite complicated, and I think there are lots of pitfalls there.
And there is,
but that's always going to. Whenever you have, whenever your leagues are not discrete, when something happens in one league can affect a group somewhere else, you're always going to get the possibility of that kind of.
Well, it's advantageous to be in a lower division. So I was initially a bit annoyed that we weren't in Tier A, and then you think, well, of course, it's best that we're in Tier B because you've got more chance of.
Well, I mean, also, the truth is that all the Tier A sides are likely to qualify, or at least sort of 10 of the 12 likely to qualify anyway.
Yeah.
And so those slots for the playoffs then would drop down to Tier B. So Tier B team should at the very least get a playoffs.
And that's been a criticism of the Nations League. And so if a high-profile nation bombs out in qualifying the traditional way, they get a second chance, which they probably don't really deserve.
It determines the seedings for the traditional method of qualifying for the Euros as well, the Nations League, because it's all wrapped up in November, isn't it?
Yeah.
As Harry Maguire said, let's just try and win the game. I don't care how it all works. England play Spain on Saturday. Barry, are you interested to see if the feel-good factor remains?
I don't think there's any question that it will remain. I'd imagine it'll be full house. England will be rapturously received.
Jonathan, who are you picking on the right side? Because you've got the defence that was playing before, you know, Stones and Walker in the three with Trippier. Gomez is starting the season very well, but you wouldn't want to change, or would you want to change it?
I didn't think Kyle Walker was entirely comfortable as a right side centre back. He made a mistake against Colombia that England weren't punished for, and then he made a mistake against Croatia that they were punished for. So I don't think he had a terrible tournament or anything, but I don't think his place is absolutely nailed on. I would assume he would keep his place for now, but yeah, maybe depending how seriously Gareth Southgate gets taken this game, maybe you bring Gomez on at half time or, you know, half an hour to go and give him a go there. Because he was in the England squad before he got the injury, wasn't he, Joe Gomez? It's not that he hasn't experienced Southgate. It's not that Southgate doesn't know him and rate him. And the way he started the season, I think it was a very good case for him replacing Walker in the three.
And Jonathan, presumably Luke Shaw, who started the season very well, will be on the left side. That spot is kind of open.
You would assume so. I mean, with Ashley Young being injured, then yeah, he's Ashley Young's replacement at Manchester United. He has begun the season very well. He appears now to have the fitness and the energy to get up and down and play as a wing-back. So, yeah. I mean, I guess it's him or Ryan Bertrand. And probably Shaw's in the better form, so.
He almost lost his leg, according to an interview I read with him.
Would have affected his game.
Yeah. When he did get that injury, there was that horrible photo that did the rounds on Twitter of that single tear running down his cheek. And I've always had a soft spot for Luke Shaw ever since then.
And actually, at the time, he was playing so well.
Yeah.
And people seem to have sort of forgotten he's become part of that whole Jose pantomime. So I think a lot of people would wish him well.
Yeah, he played very well against Tottenham. And certainly on the evidence of that, I would probably be surprised if he didn't start. But it's nice to see him back on track. I've said it many times. I think Jose Mourinho's treatment of him was nothing short of disgraceful.
Although now he is playing and starting and playing well, which is interesting.
Well, I suppose it shows there's a way back. But I mean, can Jose afford to be picky, really? Because he has serious defensive issues and he needs to pick his best players. And I think an in-form Luke Shaw is one of his best players.
Wales v Ireland, Ellis v Barry.
Yeah.
You're going.
Grudge match, I am going.
It's the grudge match. Are you looking forward to it, Ellis?
We have found... We haven't beaten Ireland since 1992. And... over the last few years have found Ireland very difficult to break down. I'm not expecting a fantastic game, although our best players are all in the squad. It's Ryan Giggs' first home game in charge. So it's his first competitive game, his first proper competitive game. So I'm looking forward to it because I'm excited about the Nations League because Coleman didn't really believe in friendlies, international friendlies, especially with Wales, can be quite dire. So I like the fact that there's a competitive element and that it matters. I'm off to Denmark at the weekend as well. So
to watch the futsal.
Well, I mean, this is hilarious what is happening with...
Not if you lose, it's not. I mean, for the rest of the world.
But. Do you know what? I saw a friend of mine tweeted, he said, good, I hope we play a bunch of part-timers and I hope we beat them 18-0. And whilst I agree with the sentiment... Having watched Wales lose to Leighton Orient, the potential banana skin aspect of it is so terrifying.
Were you at that gate? Someone sent me a clip of Leighton Orient scoring in 1996.
It was quite a good side. It was Southall and Saunders. Giggs played in that game. Coleman played. I think Hughes might have played in that game. So it is. It is terrifying. If you're not aware of what's happened, there is a dispute between the Danish FA and the proper Danish squad over commercial image rights, and so the proper squad have been banned from playing. They played, they were meant to play last night, they're playing Wales on Sunday evening. And the Danish FA said, all right then, well, if you can't agree, and players usually get their way in this, but if you can't agree, well then we'll just play a bunch of part-timers. So last night they lost.
Well, that wasn't quite what happened. They tried to get other players, but the players' union texted all their members and said, you know, this is ostensibly a picket line, don't cross it.
Yeah, so, Wales are crossing a picket line on Sunday night.
And will Kasper Schmeichel and Christian Eriksen be standing there with placards?
Warming their hands.
Chicken bricks.
Is John Jensen scabbing them? Is that what we're saying?
Yeah. John Jensen has been put in temporary charge for anyone who doesn't know.
The part-timers who played yesterday met for the first time yesterday and John Jensen took them for training. And there's some futsal players. And what worries me is that futsal is apparently what makes the Brazilians so good because it's that kind of five-a-side with a smaller, heavier ball that doesn't bounce as much. It's meant to improve your ball control. There were a couple of students played last night. It's like... butchers, a pub landlord, a taxi driver.
And they did pretty well to only lose 3-0 to Slovakia.
They only had 27% possession. But the idea of Gareth Bale and Aaron Ramsey failing to score against a bunch of Danish app developers is terrifying, isn't it?
Mikel says, which is the weirdest football-related story to emerge from Denmark this week? The bizarre squad that ended up playing Slovakia, or Liverpool hiring a Danish throw-in coach? A man who also holds the throw-in world record.
I don't really understand why that's being mocked, the throw-in coach. Like, there's a lot of throw-ins in the game. If you can get better at them, it's going to help, right?
Yes. I mean, the footballing to take the footballing dinosaur view is... technically, it's not that hard to do.
I'm sure he's not working with them like 3 hours every day.
You know, technically, kicking a ball isn't that hard to do. A toddler can do it. But they can't do it well, and if their coach to do it better, then it's an obvious thing to do. So why would you treat throw-ins any differently? He can he can train people to throw and take throw-ins longer. And he says there's a lot. I read an interview with him. He sounds like a good guy, actually. He's quite funny and quite self-effacing or self-deprecating. And, you know, he's there's three different throw-ins, quick ones, long ones, and ones to set up counter-attacks. And, yeah, he speaks a lot of sense. Jurgen Klopp was very impressed with him and immediately employed him. And I fail to see what the big deal is.
The single most difficult skill in football is the deft volley back to the thrower. Any amateur, any amateur footballer will know is you run for the ball, they throw it, and then you launch it out of play, or you just touch it so softly, it just hits the floor and starts a counter attack for the opposition. On the subject of Ireland, Barry, the Harry Arter story is interesting, isn't it?
Yeah, Harry has stood himself down for the foreseeable future, and Martin O'Neill in a press conference said that Harry, his career at club level has stalled, and he'd also had a row with Roy Keane. And while Martin O'Neill didn't go into the specifics of what that row was about, and with Roy Keane it could have been about anything, he said that might have been a factor as well. Now, Harry Arter's career at Bournemouth had stalled, but he's since gone on loan to Cardiff, and his first choice, you know, he's going to get games with Cardiff City, play regularly. He played against in that, you know, the full 90 minutes in that match against Arsenal at the weekend. So I would say it's a lot to do with his row with Roy Keane. And Ireland can't afford to lose players of Harry Arter's experience and intensity, and you know he contributes a lot. He was brilliant in that game where we beat Wales and Cardiff to get to the playoffs. He was scapegoated a bit when Denmark slaughtered us in the subsequent playoff second leg. He was taken off at half time. That might have rankled with him, because you know he certainly wasn't entirely to blame for that defeat. Nowhere. Not even close. And it's a shame. I think Ireland need Harry Arter more than they need Roy Keane, to be honest. You know, Roy Keane seems to wield an awful lot of influence for an assistant manager. You know, he does a lot of press conferences. You don't see other assistant managers doing that very often. And it's I think, sort of turned the Republic of Ireland has been the Roy Keane show for too long.
Do you think Harry Arter could come along next time with Mick McCarthy as a chaperone?
Well, it's funny you say that, actually, because Roy Keane seems to have a bee in his bonnet about Irish players who are Irish as opposed to Irish players who are, you know,
Tony Cascarino Irish.
Tony Cascarino Irish, right. Yeah. Well, even Tony Cascarino is less Irish than, you know, Harry Arter Irish. And I don't know if maybe that's something to do with it. You know, Roy Keane's always complaining about the fact that there's too many Harry Arter Irish-type players in the Irish squad. He had a go at Mick McCarthy in the past for not being fully Irish. And
he's called Mick McCarthy.
Whether or not that's anything to do with the row or a contributing factor, I don't know. But
how Irish, you know,
there's also speculation that he may have had a row with Declan Rice, and that's possibly why Rice is considering his options. But I don't know about that.
Yeah, you need a very Irish name for Roy to be okay with.
Well, I'm fully Irish, and my name isn't even remotely Irish. So.
If you were to introduce yourself to Roy Keane, would you just slip an O in front of Glenn Denning?
No, I wouldn't.
Okay. Well, that'll do for part one. In part two, a bit more on the internationals and some other stuff too. Welcome to part two of the Guardian Football Weekly Extra. We've got a live show in Oslo. We were in Manchester late last night, Barry, doing one, weren't we?
Well, yeah, we're only just back, really. I've had about 20 minutes sleep.
If Oslo's... that makes us sound a bit more rock and roll than we probably are. I actually slept with a jumper on my face on the train home. That's how cool I was. You stayed up and chatted, didn't you?
Yes, I was being sociable.
I was going to talk about what I could hear you talking about, but you definitely won't want me to put that on the podcast.
Oh, I think I know. There were people trying to get me on a dating app.
Yeah.
Yeah, not going to happen.
We could write you a profile for Guardian Soulmates.
It's not going to happen.
Okay. Would you write one for Barry? You'd write a positive one.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. What would you put in it?
You can write whatever you want. It's not going to Guardian Soulmates.
He just looks, because you got home from Manchester late, we are starting this podcast very, very, very early because of your other commitments, Max.
Yeah, apologies.
Barry looks fantastic tired. It's just a cragginess. That if, you know, if that's your thing, I think Barry's the best at it. It's like,
so that's it. That's my USP.
The best.
I look craggy tired.
If you want craggy tired,
yeah.
I'm your man.
Rory Delap had a good throw in.
Yeah.
Barry looks great tired.
So listen, Oslo, 19th of September, especially if you're into craggy men, craggy Irishmen. That is me. You're coming, Jonathan?
Yeah, sorry.
Were you bored of the pod or were you up late too?
Well, I was up late at the Guardians World Cup celebration drinks.
Oh, right.
Yeah, which we weren't at because we had to work.
There was literally conversation about this in the pub, and it was suggested that they'd try to change the date of the drinks. It didn't clash. But they realised it then would clash with the Europa League and they thought that was more important.
On the 29th of November, Christmas special just announced. Me, Barry, Wilson, is that it so far? Ellis, what are you doing on the 29th of November?
I could tell you right now, I'm going on tour, but I wonder if I'm free. Where is it? Where's the gig?
It's in London.
Oh, I've got a book show in Newcastle.
Oh, we can maybe Skype in, because yours might be better than ours. We could just take yours and bump it out.
Why are you doing your Christmas special so early?
Just to avoid people with actual commitments for Christmas that they want to go to.
Yes, yeah, fair enough.
Scotland play on Friday against Belgium and in Group C1 against Albania on Monday.
I was looking at the Scotland squad yesterday. It's actually very good. They've some terrific players in there. And their manager is Alex McLeish. He was, I don't think he was even third or fourth choice, but he's got the gig. And my concern for Scotland, I have a lot of time for Alex McLeish. He seems like a real nice guy, but he is famously conservative as a manager. And my concern for Scotland would be that he's not going to let that team play to its strengths. This game against Albania is actually very important. You know, people have been poo-pooing the Nations League, but he's described it as must-win. Which I think was ill-advised because he's already putting pressure on his players. And Scotland have a habit of not doing tremendously well in must-win matches, you know. But I would say it certainly must not lose. And I'm impressed. On paper, I think Scotland have a good squad, as well as Robertson, who's as good a full-back as there is around. If the Kieran Tierney... spring to mind, but Alan McGregor's in the form of his life playing for Rangers at the moment, so I think that could be a really good game.
David says, can the panel show some long overdue love for Stephen Dobby of Queen of the South, top scorer in all UK leagues at the time of recording? Yes, Stephen, congratulations, we love you. Northern Ireland, Group B3, they play Bosnia Herzegovina. The Leeds goalkeeper Bailey Peacock Farrell, which is a lovely name, has pledged his international future to Northern Ireland. He said, I have had several chats with the England goalkeeping coaches. One rang me the other week, in fact, but I'm loyal to Northern Ireland. He's played all six games for Bielsa's Leeds so far. Are you enjoying Bielsa, Ellis, as a championship viewer?
Yeah, Swansea were linked with Bielsa for a long time. Stephen Dobby used to play for the Swans, actually, so congratulations to him. But I love the way he sits on that upturned plastic tub, kind of reverse power play, in that he wants his status to be lower than the other manager. But it really gets in other managers' heads. But I think Bielsa's great, although he doesn't tend to stick around for very long, does he? So
will other managers try and underplay his power play.
What yeah, could they, yeah, sitting cross-legged, like
sit on a bag of cement.
Rafa did that, didn't he, in the 2007 Champions League semi-final during the penalty shootout.
What, he sat on a bag of cement?
No, he sat cross-legged on the ground during the penalty shootout to emphasise his calm.
Did he?
As Jose was facing about.
Oh, that's quite cool.
But there's a yogic quality to cross-legged, whereas actually if you brought in one of those little chairs from primary school...
Yeah.
Or the little desk and you tried to squeeze in.
I think a little one-legged milking stool.
People say he's one of the best coaches in the world, don't they? About Bielsa. So Leeds...
Don't get him started, so Wilson.
Leeds fans are thrilling. I love it. I just love a nutcase, and he appears to be a bit of a nutcase.
And there's no doubt that he's energised the whole of Yorkshire, apart from the bits that don't support Leeds. But, you know, I mean, I've said this before, but being at Scarborough for the cricket and hearing all these elderly Yorkshiremen absolutely in love with him was... It was very moving, as somebody who's written about him a lot and feel that I've kind of, in some way, polished his legend.
You knew him before he was cool.
Well, I didn't. I mean, he was very much... yeah, he'd been Argentinian coach before I got involved in him, so it's not that I knew him first, but... yeah, he's just a very good thing.
And I know for sure that we'll get a lot of praise from Northern Ireland fans for that insightful preview of the Northern Ireland game, which is, I believe, where that started. Group A1 tonight, Germany-France. Tony Crowes has said Leroy Sané is not fulfilling his potential and must improve his attitude. He says, sometimes you have the feeling with Leroy's body language that it's all the same if we win or lose. He's a player who has everything you need to be a world-class player, but sometimes you have to tell him and he has to perform better. I mean, whether you agree with Crowe saying that, with what he's saying, it's just interesting for one player to say about another player. I've not really heard that before.
Yeah, there's all these rumours after Germany gone out of the World Cup about cliques in the squad and about this divide between the players who come through at Bayern, the sort of Bavarian core of the squad, and then the rest. And I just sort of was a little bit sceptical of it. You know, when the team's had an embarrassing exit from a tournament, it's very easy to say, oh, yeah, there was cliques there. But they seem to have done everything possible since to prove that the stories are true.
But weren't those rumours going around before they went out? What was the Bling Gang and the...
Yeah.
The Bavarians.
But I mean, it came after the game against Mexico, didn't it? I just think when teams are doing badly, it's very easy to point at cliques. My suspicion now is it's true. I just sort of think that if you get any group of 23 people, then they're not all going to be equally friendly with all of them, and you're going to get little pockets within that. And I don't think that's problematic. I think that's how the world works. And you describe them as cliques as soon as results go wrong.
That was Klinsmann's thing when he was German manager, was he banned phones from the dinner table and he got them at players' lounge and because he wanted them to talk because he was so desperate to avoid
cliques. Yeah, I do think Klinsmann was kind of... bonkers. I mean, that might have been a good thing. But, you know, he when he became Bayern coach, he put stone Buddhas on the roof of the training complex, which had to be taken down after complaints from the Bavarian Catholic Church.
Were there cliques in the Guardian World Cup celebration drinks that we didn't go to?
Yeah. Well, it's the ultimate clique, isn't it? Being really? In Manchester when the drink is happening in London.
The Premier League are going to trial VAR at 15 matches this season, starting after the international break. The first trial will take place for 5:30 PM kickoffs on the 15th of September to see if the VAR hub at Stockley Park near Heathrow can cope with decisions arising from multiple matches. That's I think it's a good idea, isn't it? They decided before the World Cup that VAR wouldn't come in. Then VAR seemed to be quite good at the World Cup. So now we're going to get it back, and it seems sensible.
Jonathan. I think there's a kind of play golf at Stockley Park.
Well, thanks for that.
I know it's a good idea. Yeah, but there's a golf course there for the VAR men to fill in their mornings.
Just a quick 9 holes before they VAR on Huddersfield v Southampton. Did VAR?
Hopefully they'll be under VAR.
Jesus. Oh. Was that all for that?
No.
I really hope it wasn't.
That was spontaneous.
Ellis, did VAR impress you during the World Cup?
Well, I'm a real dinosaur when it comes to this stuff. But it seemed to improve as the tournament progressed. But it's the spectacle of especially an underdog team scoring a goal and they're all running off to celebrate at the corner flag, and then they're pulled back because it's gone to VAR, it's gone to the, you know, the touchdown referee, is just a shame because I think it takes something out of football. However, I thought it should just be for goal line technology, personally.
Jose is among a few top coaches calling on UEFA to review the away goals rule. Max Allegri, Carlo Ancelotti, Unai Emery, etc., etc. The coaches think that scoring goals away is not as difficult as it was in the past. So they think the rule should be reviewed, and that's what we will do. Marchetti, who's from UEFA, said.
Yeah, I've been banging that drum for ages.
You really have, Will. Do you want to bang it again?
Yeah, I just think it's a nonsense. Why does it matter where you score the goals? Yeah, a goal's a goal's a goal's a goal, except it's not when you've got the away goals. Yeah, why is drawing 0-0 at home and 1-1 away better than the other way around? It doesn't make any sense. And, you know, there's absolutely zero evidence. Well, in fact, no, there is evidence. The evidence proves it had made not a scrap of difference to goals per game.
And wasn't this rule originally brought in because travelling was very arduous and it took ages?
Well, it was brought in because there was a perception that the away team in European ties, because you're playing away used to be harder because of the travel, because you know, conditions would be very, very different. You know, pitch sizes used to be much more varied. It used to be much easier for the home team to intimidate the away team. Now it's travelling away. You're going to play, you know, a Champions League game in Milan or Madrid or Moscow or wherever. It's very little different to, you know, going to, for a London club, going to Newcastle or something. It takes the same length, almost the same length of time, and it's just not that hard. And so there was a perception that in the past.
It definitely takes longer to go to Moscow than Newcastle.
It depends where you start.
You said a London club.
It depends where they start. Maybe they're a training base in St. Petersburg.
Okay. No, it does.
And they travel in, yeah, they travel in comfort now.
Yeah, true.
Yeah, and they're
if you flew to, oh, it doesn't matter. If you flew to Moscow from London, it would take less time getting a coach to Newcastle.
Yes, but they don't, you know, Spurs don't get on the megabus when they play at St. James's Park, you know, with the toilet with the door just swinging open at the back.
There's the 7:05 and there's the 10, but the 10 is very tight.
So teams would just, you know,
stopping at Scotch Corner to get a ginsters. No wonder Dele Alli and Harry Kane look tired. Full of pastry, aren't they?
Yeah. Do you reckon Christian Eriksen will drive?
What, a coach? Yeah.
get him to drive, and the rest of the boys can go on the coach. How would you decide ties then, if you're going to remove the drawn ties? If you're going to remove the away leg,
by
the away goal rule,
extra time and penalties
in the second leg.
Yeah.
So there's still a home advantage to whoever's playing home second, because that's when the extra
but I mean, you've got 180 minutes to sort the thing out. If you can't do it, then we'll...
What about straight to penalties? What about no extra time then?
I would be in favour of that.
I mean, the journalist in me says yes, because there's nothing worse than extra time.
But haven't they got the Carabao Cup goes straight to penalties now?
So does the Checker Trade Trophy.
Has extra time ever been brilliant?
Yeah, in the 80s it was, when players were knackered.
Oh. I'm sure it has. I'm sure I've watched games where I'm utterly gripped by extra time.
1982 World Cup semi-final, West Germany v France.
Mm-hmm.
4 goals in extra time. 1970 World Cup semi-final, Italy v West Germany. 3 goals in extra time.
Okay, but more recently, like this World Cup, were there any good extra times in this World Cup?
Yeah, Russia v Croatia, both teams scored in extra time.
Okay. A lot of the time it is just people holding out for penalties, isn't it? I don't think... I actually don't think it would be a loss to football if extra time stopped.
No, I'd agree.
My friend Duane Roberts thought he'd scored the winner in the playoff final for Huddersfield, went and celebrated with the fans because he thought it was golden goal, and it wasn't. Taking his shirt off, though.
Expended every last ounce of energy.
He was in there, celebrated, thought they'd been promoted. Until someone said, no, Robbo, there's another 9 minutes left to play. Get your shirt back.
And?
I think they were promoted in the end. I just thought it was hilarious that he didn't know the rules.
Premier League clubs, this is the head of NHS England has said that the Premier League football clubs should do more to help tackle gambling addiction. Simon Stevens described gambling addiction as one of the new threats facing the NHS. Said reports that foreign betting companies weren't co-funding help for addicts were deeply concerning. An estimated 430,000 people in the UK have a gambling problem. 9 Premier League clubs are sponsored by betting companies. Should the Premier League clubs do more?
Yes, they should not.
It's their responsibility.
If they're taking money from betting companies, I think they should. Gambling is a very pernicious disease, gambling addiction. Betting companies pay lip service to it, but the nonsense they come out with, you know, pretending they care about people who are addicted to gambling or pretending that they do anything to help is laughable. I find it repulsive, to be honest.
What, the when the funds stop?
Yeah, all that guff. They don't want you to stop. You know, there's a case in Ireland, a friend of mine, Declan Lynch, a journalist, wrote a book about this guy. He was a postmaster in a small provincial town in Ireland. And he developed, he'd never set foot in a betting office, I think, until he was about 24. His first ever bet, I think, was a pound on Patrick Cliver to score first, World Cup 98, and the Netherlands to beat Argentina 2-1, and it duly happened. But this guy, to cut a very long and sad story short, he went on to develop a terrible gambling addiction that led to him embezzling about £3 million from the post office he worked in. And he won and lost overall £10 million, you know, ended up going to prison. And he's out now, he's turned his life around, and he works as a gambling addiction counsellor. But while he was, you know, he was a postman, worked in a post office and was gambling these out obscene sums, and while this was going on, the bookie he had his account with, rather than wonder how this guy was betting these ludicrous amounts of money on the most obscure sports imaginable, you know, basketball in the Philippines and baseball in Cuba and stuff like that, they were encouraging him and inviting him to corporate events. A bookmaker, I hasten to add, that you worked for during the World Cup, Max. But their site went down one day, and their PR man gave this guy Tony his personal number. So if you need to get any bets on, just ring me. I'll sort it for you. And they were offered no help to the guy when he was at his lowest ebb. And this nonsense that they care about their clients is just nonsense. They don't.
Do you think, like, an ethical bookmaker could be a success? For people who like to put a few quid on an accumulator, would move towards the bookie who said, we are going to take a maximum bet of a certain amount. You know, we are going to do everything
right. I'd use them. I don't know enough about the bookmaking industry to know that.
How profitable that would be. There must be so many. There are so many people. I imagine, you know, buckets of people who listen to this gamble and are not addicts in the same way that.
Well, I gamble and I'm not an addict, yeah. You know, but.
And there should be a space for that. Mm. But you just. But you're.
I don't.
There can't be a bookmaker that.
I don't think bookmakers should be allowed sponsor premium. I think it should be like. Smoking, you shouldn't be allowed to advertise, because it destroys lives. Like, if you're an alcoholic, it'll take you a while to drink the farm. You can gamble it away in 10 minutes. I've seen it happen to people, you know, and it's just, it ruins lives. And the bookies do not give a shit. They really don't. And
We both work for a radio station.
I should declare, I have taken bookie money in the past. I work for a radio station that is reliant. But it's very hard to work in sports media and not take bookie money. It's quite difficult because you. They're everywhere.
In doing stuff for bookies. So, I mean, we agree that, you know, as with many things in life, there's nothing wrong with doing with betting in moderation. There is a danger of addiction, and there needs to be measures in place to try and prevent that happening, and to try and support and protect people who do develop an addiction. But it, you know, if you say outlawed gambling, the situation would be far worse, because then it would not be monitored, would not be regulated at all.
I'm not saying outlaw gambling.
The dangerous situation you have in, say, India, where a lot of Indian cricket is very corrupt because the bookmakers operate completely outside the law, and you know they're illegal entities. Whereas at least in Britain, they are legal, they are taxed, and they are to a degree regulated.
I'm not saying outlaw gambling. I'm just saying the bookmaking firms should not be allowed
to sponsor clubs.
Advertise.
Yeah, I mean, that.
If you want a bet, go and have a bet, but don't. There's a generation of kids growing up who just associate football with gambling, because there's gambling ads before, during, and after every single game.
And also, the thing with gambling ads is they make the lifestyle of a gambler look so fantastic, and it never is.
What, you think those people in the Ladbrokes ads, like, they think they're fun people to hang around?
No, the worst is the Betway man. You know, what are you doing? I'm hanging out with sportsmen. You're like, you're giving him a lift. Like, that one, the really smug Betway man was the one
sports people who don't even get changed out their kit before they get in the car.
Yeah, I think it's that the marketing behind gambling companies is, to use a word Barry used, quite pernicious. But you can't stop people from having a flutter. But, you know, smoking sponsored everything. The 80s sponsored Formula One and stuff like that.
Snooker, cricket,
obviously. And all that's gone. And I don't think there's anything wrong with doing that with gambling.
That book, by the way, I mentioned, is called Tony 10, The Story of the Postman Who Lost 10 Million Euros. It's really worth a read. It's a cautionary tale. I mean, just the way his life just spiralled so hopelessly out of control, and he still couldn't stop gambling. It's tragic, and it's very funny as well in its own way.
Can I just say...
The book, not the way he's launched.
I hated the guy. Loved every second.
Ellis, I mean, you have a lovely voice, but you saying, I think the word flutter said by you is arguably one of the most beautiful things I've ever heard.
You're too
actually.
Kind.
That'll do for part two. In part three, your questions, where Ronaldo's gone, and David Beckham's new Miami franchise. Welcome to part three of the Guardian Football Weekly Extra. Brazil's World Cup winner Ronaldo has become the major shareholder of Real Valladolid after purchasing a 51% controlling stake in the Spanish club. President Carlos Suarez says the arrival of Ronaldo puts Real Valladolid on the map and will allow the club to take a leap in quality. Speaking at a news conference, Ronaldo said, "I've gone through many stages in my training in football to prepare. Football is a passion." Do you have any thoughts on this? Is this that basically Ronaldo has to be in Spanish football at one point, and because Cristiano Ronaldo left to balance the equilibrium of
Ronaldo? You told me about this on the way up to Manchester yesterday, and I couldn't understand why Ronaldo would do this. And we said, "Well, we'll ask Sid," and Sid doesn't know either.
You spent 27 million quid.
Yeah, on a not, as Sid described it, a not very interesting club in a not very interesting town. But he also said that Ronaldo's quite a shrewd businessman, apparently. So, but yeah, it seems a very strange move. And if Sid can't explain it, I certainly can't.
David Beckham's MLS side will be called Club Internacional de Football Miami, or Inter Miami.
Oh, so it's Internacional spelt in the Spanish way?
It is, yes, with a C.
Okay. That makes more sense.
Does that make... Okay, yes, because into Miami...
Hispanic influence in Miami.
The crest has come out. It is pink, black and white, featuring two herons. It said on the PR guff about the herons' legs being unbreakable.
They're not, though, are they?
Well, they're not. I mean, of all the legs you could pick, they seem quite breakable. You should have had, you know, Darren Moore's legs. Well, some, they look unbreakable.
Roberto Carlos, he had big legs.
He did, yes.
Stuart Pearce.
So there are all sorts of
legs.
Stuart Pearce's legs were breakable because he broke one and continued playing for 5 weeks.
Yeah. Wilfred Bourne's got big legs.
He does have big legs, doesn't he? So a poor choice there.
Mido. Yeah. Massive legs.
Yeah. Milo's quite large in general.
Yeah, in proportion, don't get me wrong.
He's not anymore.
Oh, has he lost weight?
He's lost a lot of weight. Oh. He was, doctor told him he had to because he was in danger of dying. So he's lost a hell of a lot of weight.
I was once on a plane with Mido and Michael Jackson.
Stop it. Just the three of you.
No. It was an Alitalia flight. Me and Mido had flown from Cairo in 2006 to Milan and changed planes in Milan and then on to London.
Michael Jackson, the Prince of Pop?
Yeah. And I was right at the front of economy, and I was aware they were being very kind of more cautious with the curtains and things.
They were really shutting that curtain fast.
And then they when we landed, they kind of held everybody in economy for ages. And yeah, I was sort of at the front. And because I'd spent a month in Egypt kind of dealing with idiot security people, I was like, oh, fuck's sake, just shove the guy out of the way. And there's Michael Jackson in front of me. And then weirdly, the next morning, I was on another plane with Mido going to Newcastle. Because Sunderland were playing.
Was it coincidental?
Why are you following me?
Well, we were both going from the same place to the same place. Yeah. It was entirely reasonable. We both wanted to get to Sunderland v Tottenham. We both started in Cairo. We both went by Milan and London. Michael Jackson did not go at Sunderland v Tottenham.
He was at Fulham's game.
He was the king of pop. I think Justin Bieber is the prince of pop. Sorry, it's been a long time since I've thought about Michael Jackson, actually.
I remember precisely where I was when Michael Jackson died. I was in a hotel in the Michelangelo Hotel in Sandton, Johannesburg. And I was with Tarek, who was on here 2 weeks ago. And because he's working for Bloomberg, he had all wire journalists have their screens open all the time, just in case they miss something. And it popped up on the screen, Michael Jackson dead. And I looked over the next table, and there was Gerard Houllier and a Japanese journalist. And so my first instinct was to go, Gerard, Michael Jackson's dead. And he went, And so, a little bit disappointed by that. But I was then, half an hour later, I'm going to the toilet and I pass Christian Carambul. I'm like, Christian, Michael Jackson's dead. But then really weirdly, I was in Edinburgh 2 years ago, told that anecdote, and a bloke in the front row starts jumping up and down, waving his hand. You obviously have something to tell the class. And he went, I'm a sports lawyer. I was sitting at a table in the Michelangelo Hotel that night. And Christian Cambo came over to me and went, the bloke's just telling me Michael Jackson's dead.
Oh, what a news force you are. You were 24-hour news for these people. Turning Christian Cambo into a news courier. That was your job, Jonathan. That was obviously where this was going to go. That is David Beckham's new franchise. Here's a tweet from Robert Earnshaw. Since we sent robots to Mars before sending humans, isn't it possible that the first extraterrestrials that we encounter on Earth could not be the aliens themselves, but might be their technology instead?
He's a bit of a stoner, isn't he, Robert Earnshaw?
Is he?
With his tweets. He often sends out these quite cryptic...
That makes sense, doesn't it?
Yeah, he will tweet... questions like, if you could have a minute's conversation with yourself in the past or the future, what would you choose? My favourite one is a couple of years ago, he just tweeted.
Even though I have
never done it, I am fully confident in my ability to count to 1,000.
Are you serious?
Yeah. Robert Earnshaw tweeted that.
A friend of mine.
Fully confident.
One of my best friends, Nick, and I were in Fiji, and there was nothing to do. I mean, literally nothing to do.
You didn't count to 1,000.
So we said, why don't we count to 1,000, right? And we're doing alternate numbers, right? And I'll tell you, it's an ordeal. You think it's easy? I mean, Robert Earnshaw thinks it's easy. It's an ordeal.
How long did it take?
We got to 440, and he said 451, right?
His
head had gone. He got complacent.
Again,
well, for a start, we were very sad, and then we were hysterical for a while. I've never tried again, so I don't believe I could do it.
Well, Ernie's not talking about tag teaming it. He's talking about just straight up sitting down in his house. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7.
It's interesting on international breaks on our radio show, because nothing's happening, what we usually do is find an 18-year-old who's on work experience and put them in another studio and make them count, say, a tin of beans or, you know, a bag of rice.
Right. I keep just telling you, you get this wrong all the time. Counting a tin of beans is easy. One, there, you finished. Counting the contents of a tin of beans is slightly more difficult. That's what we get to
do. That's what we get them to do. I mean, I think there's... I'm pleased with Robert Earnshaw. On this point, though, he's possibly right, isn't he? It's an interesting...
It makes complete sense, yeah.
It made total sense. And it's only,
you would send a probe first, yeah.
I'm only mocking it because I didn't expect Robert Earnshaw to send the tweet. You know, if it had been... Who's that science man? What's he called?
Stephen Hawking.
Brian, no, I don't think...
Brian Cox.
Brian Cox had tweeted it, I'd have been like, yeah, you're right, Brian. So perhaps that's a future for Robbie Earnshaw.
What if Brian Cox had been talking about scoring hundreds of goals in the championship but not being able to quite do it at top level?
Ludicrous. Why were you laughing so hysterically?
Oh, no, I was just comparing the profundity of Robert Earnshaw's line of questioning to the time you asked Paul Merson whether he'd rather have knives for arms or forks for legs.
Which I did on a pilot for The Debate. Yeah. You know, the show at 10 at night.
Yeah, yeah. It's quite a serious show.
It's quite a serious show, but I wasn't told that. The head of football...
Well, I think they wanted us on.
The head of football said, get Barry in and we'll get Merce and just do what you do on the radio. And so I sent a tweet out asking for questions, and one of them was, would you rather have forks for arms or spoons for legs? And Merce said, what am I walking on? Am I on sand? I love how seriously he took it. Anyway.
Needless to say, it wasn't picked up by Sky. I had a good hour, though. I enjoyed it.
I think that would be a better watch, wouldn't it? Here's a story from Paraguay. A stray dog has become the assistant coach of Paraguayan club Two de Mayo. The manager, Carlos Yara Saguier, one day fed her a piece of empanada, and she hasn't left his side since. Club Dos de Mayo, as producer Jonathan says. When Tassahapara isn't allowed in the technical area, she watches from the stands. It's sort of like Neil Warnock sent to the dog is sent to the stands. Gets a better view of the game, I presume. Do you want some questions and some comments from people? We were talking about...
Not hard questions.
No, they're not hard. Good fanzine names, because we were talking about Coventry City's one called Gary Mabbott's Knee. Isha Hammer says... I was an avid reader of Gillingham's excellent Brian Moore's Head Looks Uncannily Like the London Planetarium.
Oh, yeah.
Back in the day. That is a brilliant name, isn't it? Tom says, has anyone been back to the popular Portuguese chicken restaurant since the Daily Pods ended?
I haven't, actually.
No, neither have I.
Sorry, say that again.
We would have an almost daily Nando's during the World Cup. But I've not been.
I actually was going to go the other night, but the one near my house is opposite Brixton Academy, and there was a gig on, so it was packed, so I took my business elsewhere.
Luke has a question, which I could have asked Merce on that pilot. Would you rather be a football-sized human or a human-sized football?
Would I be a sentient football?
Okay, yes.
But I just get kicked around.
Volleyballing, Castaway.
Is being kicked painful? So you could be the ball in a World Cup final or a Champions League final.
So you could pick the game.
Yeah, that'd be quite exciting.
You wouldn't want to be on the end of your boa, would you?
Volleyed into oblivion.
How much control do you have over the flight? I mean, could you actually affect the result?
Now that is an interesting question.
These modern balls flying about,
like the Jubiliani.
Yeah. You wouldn't pick that. You'd be an Adidas Tango, wouldn't you?
Yeah, you'd be an Adidas, a 1982 Adidas Tango, the Questra.
Or one of the, or one of those balls. You'd be like a Stanley Matthews, one of those really heavy,
yeah,
sodden balls.
I'd be a slightly deflated one floating in a dirty canal.
Please don't break me on concrete. Please don't kick me on concrete.
Mike said on Monday's pod in the preview, you said you'd get to mention Roland de Châtelet. You then proceeded not to mention Roland de Châtelet. As a Charlton fan, I was wondering why you didn't mention Roland de Châtelet Hashtag Roland de Châtelet. This might, it was from Christopher, who says, as an English father to two American kids, they're used to strange cultural references, but they're confused why I keep walking around the house in Chicago telling them in a Scottish accent, I plan to have a quick word with Roland de Châtelet. Thanks, Max. No, thank you, Christopher. And Chicago is a nice place.
For anyone who doesn't know, that's Max doing an impersonation of Jim White,
yeah,
who you're sitting in for this week. Do you think you could do Jim White's show as Jim White and people wouldn't notice?
The whole thing?
Yeah.
I mean, that's 3 hours.
Rob Brydon did an hour as Ken Bruce, didn't he, on Radio 2?
Did he?
His Ken Bruce is uncanny, so he did an hour as Ken Bruce.
Well, his Jim White is absolutely spot on.
I mean, I could give it a try. I'd get awfully tired, because Jim is so ebullient, isn't he? I mean, he's so, so much energy. I'll try it this morning.
Just do it for an hour.
An hour?
Will you tell me that I've done well in Jim White's voice?
Let me tell you, Ellis James today has been outstanding. And after the break, you will not believe what Ellis has to say on the subject of Shota Avaladze's move from Partick Thistle. It is extraordinary. You won't want to miss it. Jim White, Talk Sport.
That felt fantastic.
Barry, thanks for your time.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ellis.
No problem.
Thanks, Jonathan.
Cheers.
Back on Monday.
For more great podcasts from The Guardian, just go to theguardian.com/podcasts.